Good morning, church family. Oh, isn't it a beautiful Sabbath day? Oh, I've been blessed already. How about you? Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you, worship team, so much for leading us in worship of our God this morning. If you hadn't noticed, that is one of our newest additions to the worship ministry. And thanks so much for leading us this morning. We were richly blessed. Faithfulness at a price. Have you ever been faithful and true to something and then had to pay a price for it? I don't mean a positive, but a negative. You know, if I were to write a book on just the life of Joseph, at least for the next few chapters, I would probably title it, One is a Lonely Number. Have you ever been so absolutely all alone, so totally by yourself, that you didn't feel like you had a friend in life, that even your own family had forsaken you, and you were absolutely out in the cold all alone? Well, that's where we left Joseph, last week. He had been sold by his brothers, his own family, to the Ishmaelites, the cousins, as a slave to be taken to Egypt and be sold on the auctioneer's block. And so we have now this transition. In chapter 39, Joseph, the son of Jacob, the favored son of Jacob, the one that was blessed, the one that got to wear the special coat, the ornamented coat, the coat with all the bling on it, is now in chains, being auctioned off in Egypt for the highest bidder. Can you think of a more devastating experience to have gone through? Can you think of a lower point in your life than where Joseph was? The year is 1900, and China is in turmoil. Bands of vigilantes are running through the streets, beating people, killing some, taking others captive. But their main focus is on all foreigners. Missionaries are surrounded by mobs of people shouting, foreign devils, amokau, foreign devils, foreign devils, foreign devils. And often these crowds, these mobs would turn violent, and these missionaries and foreigners would be beat, and some of them, yes, would even die. The Chinese Empress had sent out a secret death decree to kill all Christians and all missionaries. The records show that that summer, mobs of government officials and vigilantes roamed the streets of Shanghai and most of the main cities in China. They killed 186 missionaries and thousands of Chinese Christians. When I heard this story for the first time, it was at the feet of a man by the name of Dr. Harry Miller. Some of you may know who Harry Miller was. He's a great name in mission books, in the history of the early Advent movement in China. He and his wife had left at a very young age, and they had dedicated their lives to serving God in China, to bringing health and healing to the thousands and thousands of people that were suffering. And God had called them to come as missionaries to China. And now suddenly they found themselves in this upheaval, in this revolution that was taking place, thousands of people being killed and slaughtered and beaten here and there. And yet God had called them to be faithful. The violence grew worse and worse, and they were told by the American embassy that they were not to leave their homes. They were to stay in their homes until the soldiers could come and safely escort them out of the city. But Dr. Miller felt called. He had come, he'd answered the call of God to come to China to heal, to bring healing to the sick and the suffering. And so at night he would sneak out and try to help those that needed his care. One day, his wife became deathly ill. And after trying to treat her and trying to help her, she eventually died. And he knew that for him to take her outside into the city streets, to take her down to the cemetery to give her a proper burial, meant death for him also. So he waited till night had fallen, and then he laid her over his shoulder, and he crawled over the wall to the outside of the city, and he buried her outside that city. Dr. Miller's greatest desire was to show the compassion of Jesus to the millions of Chinese. And yet, he suffered horribly for that commitment. He lost his wife, his loving, dear wife. He underwent incredible pain for the sake of the sharing of the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ. I was privileged to hear him tell this story in person. And I remember I was just a young boy at the time, and I just sat there at his feet, just totally engrossed and enthralled. And as I have studied the history of the Boxer Revolution, I realized how terrible that time was. I had no idea what he had been through. And then that followed with the Mao Zedong Revolution that brought communism into China. And he had to leave that great country. And yet, in spite of all this turmoil, in spite of all the pain and all the suffering that he went through, his focus was sure. He knew his calling. And he was committed. Question we ask, is God with you when you suffer for no apparent reason? She was a loving mother and a dear wife. And years before, her husband and her oldest son had laid down their lives in some of the great battles of World War II. And now, as we stood on the shore of the lake, the lifeguards were diving frantically out there, just off the shore, searching for her only son who had gone under the water. And as I watched, I was just a young boy at the time, 7 years old. I wondered what her response would be. She was left all alone in this world. She began to sing. I would love to tell you what I think of Jesus, how I found in him a friend so kind and true. I will tell you how he changed my life completely. That was her testimony. She was all alone. I ask the question again, is God with you when you suffer for no apparent reason? I have personally visited countless cemeteries around the world, in places like Korea and Borneo and Singapore and Hong Kong and Taiwan. And I can tell you from my own personal experience, I've seen rows and rows and rows of stones with names of individuals who gave up their lives so that the good news of salvation could be spread around the world. I would say that the overwhelming evidence would tell us that God's faithful do suffer. And Joseph is no exception. If you read the story found here in Genesis chapter 39, the first decision that Joseph had to make as he was being torn away from his homeland, as he passed by his father's tents in the distance, he had to make up his mind. He had to make a decision. He was only 17 years old when he was taken from his home and sold as a slave. A young boy. The first decision that Joseph had to make was this: God is in control. And he knew that he had to depend completely and totally on God. The events in his life were out of his control. He was now a slave. He no longer owned his own body. He no longer owned himself. He was being sold to a master. And at that point in his life, he had to decide if he was going to allow the events of his life to embitter him, to cause him to go against God's will, or would he stay faithful and true, regardless of the suffering in his life, would he stay faithful and true to God's calling? The second decision that Joseph had to make. By the way, these decisions had to be made quickly. There wasn't time to sit around and theologize. There wasn't time to sit around and philosophize or to ask questions. He had to make these decisions right then and there at that very moment. The second decision he had to make was he had to decide to believe that God had a plan for his life. And I would like to suggest this morning that the reason that he knew that God had a plan for his life because he had listened to the stories of his great-grandfather Abraham and how God had planned his life and how God had led his great-grandfather through the wilderness. He had heard the stories of his grandfather Isaac and how God had led Isaac. He had heard the stories of his own father around the campfires, how his father talked about how God had led him, yes, even through times of loneliness and times of dismay and times of suffering. And so he had the faith of his fathers to lean upon, the stories of his family, men and women of faith. And he believed that God had a plan. He knew this because he had grown up in the stories, hearing the stories of his grandfather, his great-grandfather, and his own father. But he also had learned something too, because he had watched and he'd observed this. He had seen night after night when his father would go out into the desert and look up at the heavens, and he would hear his father's voice as he talked to God in heaven. Joseph knew that he had to stay connected with God, no matter what. Because he knew that life would bring him many discouraging situations. He knew that there would be opportunities for him to stray from God's will in his life. Would he stay faithful? He didn't have to wait very long. We just read it, didn't we? He didn't have to wait very long. God, it says in chapter 39 of Genesis, it says the Lord was with Joseph and he prospered. Now I ask you again the question, is God with us in our suffering? Was Joseph suffering? Absolutely. Was God with Joseph in his suffering? Absolutely. It says right here in God's Word. It says the Lord was with Joseph. So whenever you are suffering in your life, you may be suffering right now. I don't know the circumstances of your suffering, but I can assure you today that the same God that promised to bless Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph, the same God that loved them loves you too. And if you are suffering, God is there. Because we're told that He understands our suffering. He understands our pain. He understands our sorrow. And believe me, He understands our loneliness. And so the Lord was with Joseph. And it says also in verse 5, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. Now some of you might be saying, well, you know what? My life is full of sadness and sorrow. My job is a real hassle. The people I work around don't understand me. They don't understand the values that I hold in my life. They are constantly trying to trip me up. I'm not happy, but I have to work. And so, you know, I'll do my thing. But the only time that God really blesses me is when I'm at home or I'm at church. I would like to suggest that maybe you're not looking for God's blessing in your life. That you are so distraught and so disappointed that you've somehow disconnected from God. Stay connected and look for God's blessings in your life. Even, yes, even in your suffering. And just when things are going good, just when things seem to be looking up, just when Joseph is beginning to feel the blessings of God in his life, what happens? Well, this is what I call the uh-oh part of the chapter. Now Joseph was well built and handsome. And after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, "Come to bed with me." Joseph had to make a decision. He had to make a decision to sidetrack his life, to follow after his own inclinations, to follow after the ways of the world, or to stay faithful and true to his calling. And so he chose to stay faithful and true. By the way, I might point out that this is not a typical pattern in the family of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Excuse me, you've been with us now for months, and we've been talking about this family, haven't we? The reality of this family was, this family had a real problem when it came to sexual things. All right? Had a real problem. And don't forget that his great-grandfather, who was in Egypt at one time, really blew it when it came to this type of a decision. And so did his grandfather, and his father, and his brothers, and the list goes on. But remember something, that when you choose to be a transitional individual, when you choose to follow the leading and the counsel and the guidance of God Almighty, He will give you the strength. He will give you the strength to go through this type of an experience. And of course, I believe that Joseph is probably the first person that ever said no. At least that's recorded in the scriptures. Joseph said no. And when he said no, he knew in the back of his mind by saying no that something bad was going to happen. He knew that this woman was not going to let this one just simply slide. He was going to catch it. His suffering probably would become worse, and he was right. Because she made up a story. She lied. And she told her husband that Joseph had tried to attack her and rape her. And of course, because of that, because of his faithfulness, because he stood up for what he believed, young people, let me tell you something today. There will be multiple times, there will be many, many times in your life when you will have to make decisions just like the decision that Joseph had to make here. You will have to decide whether you would stay faithful and true to God's leading in your life or you will just go the way of the world. And let me tell you, Joseph decided to follow God. And that meant he would be punished. That meant there would be more suffering in his life. And so his master became angry. It says that Potiphar was angry. He was enraged. And he took Joseph and he threw him in prison. Now, believe me, in those days, slaves were not considered. Actually, they weren't even as valued as your horse or your dog. And so it would have meant nothing if Potiphar had drawn his sword that very moment and taken Joseph's head off. It would have meant nothing, and it would have bothered anybody. But I think in the back of Potiphar's mind, he knew that Joseph was a man that had scruples. He was a man of faith. He was someone you could trust. He was someone you could count on. And so instead of taking his life, he sent him off to prison. The third principle, that third decision that Joseph had to make was simply this: God will never forsake me. God will never forsake me. Say that to yourself. God will never forsake you. Never. I know that's hard. It's hard to believe because everyone else may have forsaken you, or maybe you've had people forsake you and people who have lied and gotten you into trouble and you've suffered because of that. But I can assure you one thing, God will never forsake you. No matter how harsh, no matter how hard life becomes, God will never forsake. All others were against Joseph. His brothers had sold him, and now Potiphar had thrown him in prison. I'd like to suggest something. I don't know what struggles you're going through, what hardships you're going through, what suffering you might be going through this morning. But let me tell you this, and listen carefully. Do not judge God's blessings or His presence by the degree of suffering in your life. Let me say that again. Do not judge God's blessings or His presence by the degree of suffering in your life. I know that runs against everything we think of as human beings. When things are going bad, well, God must not love me anymore. When we're suffering and we're in pain and we can't take another day of it, you know, God, why don't you do something about my suffering? Why don't you come down here and help me out? Do not judge God's love for you and His presence in your life by the suffering in your life. To be a transitional person, you must develop a deep, abiding confidence that God is with you even if it doesn't feel like it. Did you hear that? I have this written in a little card and I keep it in my Bible and sometimes I keep it in my car. To be a transitional person, as Joseph was, to move from dysfunction to function, to move from unhealthiness to healthiness, to move from unfaithfulness to faithfulness, you must develop a deep, abiding confidence that God is with you, even if it doesn't feel like it. Do not trust your emotions to tell you whether God is present or not. Your emotions will always fail you. Joseph had to learn that. If Joseph had gone by his feelings, he would have felt that everyone, including God, had rejected him. And he may as well just become the bad guy that everybody thought he was. Why even try? Why should I try to be anything else but bad? Because every time I turn around, it seems as though somebody is lying about me, somebody is hurting me, somebody is causing suffering in my life. Why don't I just go on and be a bad boy? You know, there's a lot of that kind of thinking going on. You give up on life, you lose hold of the relationship with God, and you say, I'm too tired, I can't keep going this way, I'm just going to give up. I'm just going to give up. Let me tell you something. If you give up, it's only because of your own perceptions. It's only because of your own emotions. It's not because God has promised. God has promised that He will be with us through thick and through thin, through hardship, through the valley of the shadow of death. I will be with you. How do I know that? Because God never let His only begotten Son go, even to the cross. He was there. If Harry Miller had ever followed his emotions, there would be thousands and hundreds of thousands of Chinese Christians that would never have learned or felt the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ. If William Carey had followed his own feelings and his own emotions, if he had followed the inclination to give up and surrender, millions of people in India would have never learned the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ. If Samuel Munson, my distant relative, had followed his own feelings, he would have given up and he would have never walked down that trail there in Sumatra and died on that jungle trail as a martyr. And thousands, literally thousands of Indonesians would have never learned the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ. If David Lim, who spent decades in a Chinese prison rotting away during Mao Zedong's government, if he had given up in prison, thousands of Chinese would have never felt the touch of Jesus in their lives. And so God gave Joseph a sound mind. He gave him the ability to work hard. And as Joseph remained faithful and true, God was able to bless him in every adversity. God was able to bless him. Through the thick and the thin, through the hardship, through the good times, God was there. God was blessing Joseph's life. And in turn, as God blessed Joseph's life, so were the people around him blessed. So I ask again the question, is God there in our suffering? Another question that comes to mind as we read the story of Joseph here in Egypt. This question is, how long are you willing to wait to see the fulfillment of God's plan in your life? 1 year? 3 years? 5 years? 10 years? 20 years? A lifetime? Do you know that William Carey gave his whole life to sharing the good news of the gospel? And at the end of his life, he could almost count on two hands how many people he actually saw come to the Lord. He gave his whole life for that. My great-great uncle, who died in Indonesia as a martyr, never saw the thousands and thousands of people who gave their lives to the Lord because of the blood, his blood that was spilt on that jungle trail. It would be 100 years later that a representative from that tribe would come and seek out my father with a shawl that from that tribe, and asking for forgiveness for martyring my great-great-uncle. Asking my father's family, the Munson family, to forgive what they had done to him. And then that lady turned and said to my father, it's because of your great-great-uncle that thousands of people have given their lives to the Lord. He died with no knowledge whatsoever of what his blood would bring about, an incredible transformation. And that particular tribe in Indonesia is the largest Christian tribe in all of Indonesia, actually all of Malaysia. They have sent out more missionaries worldwide than any other tribe. Incredible. Once again, if you are looking for all the wonderful things in your life to take place, all the wonderful blessings that will be poured out, you're looking for your life to be easy street, then you're looking in the wrong direction. Because if you have dedicated your life, if you are called to share the good news, the testimony of Jesus Christ in your life, you may not see the results. It may be the next generation or five generations down the road. God only calls us to be faithful and true to His calling. Can you be faithful in God's presence? Even when your prayers for protection and safety are answered no? Think about it. This morning when I was doing my morning devotion, I began to think about some of these questions that I've asked this morning. And I began to realize that we've had it pretty good here in America for the last 100 years. Things have been pretty good. We live on easy street compared to the rest of the world. We have it great here. Oh yeah, there's a lot of whining about the stock market. There's a lot of whining about the economy and the crashing and all that crazy stuff that's going on around us. But you know what? If you're called to be one of God's servants, none of that should make any difference. None of that should make any difference, because we're not investing our lives in the stock market here on this earth. We're investing our lives in the kingdom of heaven. I challenge you never to forget that. Those of you that are young people, 12-year-old, 10-year-old, 8, 7, 6, whatever age you are, early young adults, collegiates, I want to tell you something. God has a plan in your life. He has a purpose for your life. The question is, will you give Him time to show you?